Welcome to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Zoning is not the sexiest topic around, but deciding who gets to live where turns out to be both important and surprisingly contentious. Zoning decides who our neighbors are, what it costs to build a house, whether we need a car, even whether there are sidewalks in our neighborhoods. And with Central Ohio expected to swell to 3 million people by 2050, zoning will determine whether Columbus remains an affordable place to call home. In short, zoning is the invisible hand that shapes so much of the way we live our lives. We're spending the next hour talking about zoning, how it works, and how lawmakers at all levels of government are thinking about changing it. We begin with State Senator Michelle Reynolds, a Central Ohio Republican who spent 6 months traveling our state as chair of the Senate's Housing Committee. Their work culminated in a 90-page report and three pieces of bipartisan legislation, including one all about zoning. Senator Reynolds, welcome to All Sides.
Thank you, Anna. Happy to be here.
The report that you published made 23 recommendations over 97 pages, so no small amount of work. But I want to drill down on recommendation number three, which was to help cities review their zoning codes to, quote, modernize opportunities for housing. Where did this idea come from?
So, Anna, as you know, as you poignantly stated, we traveled the state with the Senate Select Committee on Housing for 6 months, talking to constituents all over the state, breaking up the state into five regions, and really drilling down on what are some of the housing challenges that they're experiencing in their areas. And we learned that Ohio is the tale of two states, right? We have the urban side and we have the rural side. And on the urban side, we're seeing that cities are burgeoning, right? Population growth, and there are so many people that are coming into our cities like Columbus and Cleveland and Cincinnati, and there's just not enough places to stay, especially that are affordable. And then on the rural aspect, we are seeing that there is population decline, and it's not affordable to live there for other reasons, because it's not affordable to develop there, and there's lack of infrastructure needed to be able to make those developments. And there is just a gap in bond financing where the locals can't necessarily utilize those economic development tools to build. So because of that, and what we heard from the local constituents, we found out that there were very many things that needed to be addressed, and zoning came at one of the top of them. And so that's why in our recommendations, you see zoning called out.
So when we think of zoning, we generally think of it as a local ordinance that's passed. How can the state help with that, particularly when it comes to the price of housing?
So I think you make a good point. A lot of the housing issues that we're dealing with are very local issues. And so that was one of the main questions that we wanted to know as a state. You know, obviously, housing is a huge problem. It's a crisis.
Particularly here in Central Ohio.
But we are hearing from local communities that they just don't have the tools and the resources to be able to tackle this problem by themselves. And because what has been happening is that everyone's been trying to address this in a vacuum, it looks like we need some uniformity. But that doesn't mean that the state should be playing a role in being prescriptive or telling locals what to do. So our main question was, how can we help and be of assistance? And so with that, that's how we came up with the 23 recommendations.
So Senate Bill 243 deals with zoning, but it's short. It's very short, this legislation. It's essentially a placeholder bill that says you intend to write a law about zoning. Mm-hmm. Can you explain why you wanted to introduce it this way?
Absolutely. The same reason that we took the approach of doing a study committee first. This is our intent to say, hey, look, we've heard you. When we went around the state, we heard that there are zoning challenges. The reality is that a lot of local communities have zoning codes that are 70 and some even 80 years old, but they don't necessarily have the tools to be able to, or the workforce or the expertise to be able to really tackle what they need to do to try to modify it or modernize it. And so we intend to help them do that. our goal with this bill was really just to put a placeholder there. It was intentional to be short because we don't want to be prescriptive. We don't want to say...
You're not going to ban single-family housing throughout the state.
No, absolutely not. We have no appetite to come in and tell a local community what they need to be doing. We want to ask them, you know, how can we help you help your local challenges? And so that's very different from an urban community like Columbus to a rural community like Marietta. And so our goal is to elicit feedback, to get to start the conversation, which is what a placeholder bill is, a conversation starter, and to build policy from the ground up and not the top down.
So is it about providing experts and resources? Because, you know, the city of Columbus is undertaking a massive revamp of its zoning code. It's called Zone In. And they're only starting with 4% of the parcels in the city of Columbus because that's already more than 12,000 pieces of land that they need to look at.
Yes, absolutely. And so I just want to applaud what the city of Columbus is doing. Obviously, because they're an urban, big urban community, they have lots of resources and lots of money. But they've taken a great approach of being very inclusive and asking the community for their feedback and their input, which is what we want to do as well from a state level. But I applaud the city of Columbus for getting ahead of it and looking at, you know, we have to address these challenges. What we can't do is continue to ignore the problem, because as we know, we are expecting more population because we are a huge economic generator in the state of Ohio with big projects on the horizon. And so we have to do something to address it.
We also want to hear from you this hour. Do you have a comment about the city's zone-in plan or zoning more generally? Is there a question or concern that you'd like to share? Give us a call at 614-292-8513, or you can email your comments to allsides@wosu.org. You know, one of the things that zone-in here in Columbus is talking about is increasing density. So raising the level or how many stories you can build, decreasing the amount of parking you have to put with apartments, moving from single family to multifamily. Increasing density isn't the only way to bring down housing prices, though. One of the things we talked about during our Untangled series on housing earlier this year was how zoning adds to the cost of building a house. And I'm hoping you can talk about that, because I was really stunned to hear Central Ohio home builders say it can tack on an extra $100,000 to the purchase price of a home.
So, you know, there's no question that there is a supply shortage of housing. And so, and we also know that there's no one size fits all approach. So zoning is not the end all be all or silver bullet that's going to make this problem go away. However, it is one piece of the puzzle, and it is a critical piece. We need to look at lots of different things that we can do to drive down the cost of housing. And quite frankly, inflation is one of the biggest culprits of,
oh my goodness,
and illegal immigration. Both of those things are very big numerators that actually drive up the cost of housing. And so those are just essential pieces that need to be done. But I do believe that if we are going to increase supply, one of the shortest ways to crack that nut is to look at how do we increase density, especially in a city. I'm not necessarily talking about in a rural community, but in a city, it makes sense that if you have a zoning code that specifically only has single family, and you could be a little bit more flexible in your zoning code to also offer a multifamily approach, that just seems to make sense. We're not talking about going vertical to the level of building up like Chicago, but we are talking about being able to fit people into the spaces that we already have. And I just think that that's pretty flexible. And that's what we need in this day and age, is more flexibility in our zoning code.
But as I'm sure you know, since you came up through local government and you've been a housing provider for many,
yes,
many years.
Absolutely.
Is that people get real funny real fast when you talk about changing what's being built across the street from them.
Absolutely. And so we call that not in my backyard.
Yes.
And I completely understand that, being a coming up as a township trustee. And I understand that it gives us a lot of pause because we, you know, quite frankly, that just means we don't want that here. Do that in the city somewhere. And I can totally appreciate.
We need more affordable housing, just not near me.
Absolutely. And so, but what I would say to that is, you know, we definitely want to respect home rule. We want to respect communities and what they believe is best for their community. That's not what we're trying to do here is to come in and be preemptive at all. But what we are saying is, look, Ohio is changing. And just like our children have to grow, we don't keep them in the fourth grade, fifth grade, you know, or sixth. You just can't keep them small forever. And inevitably, because they grow, we have to help them develop. And Ohio is the same way. Ohio is changing, whether we like it or not. Ohio is growing. We have Intel coming. We have to manage the problem or the problem will manage us. So this is just an opportunity for us to get ahead of things and have a seat at the table to say, if we're going to grow, we need to grow responsibly and we need to be strategic about our growth and we need to be comfortable with it and not let someone impose it upon us. If we do nothing, it's going to be put upon us, and that's not what we want.
I love that analogy of children because it fits so perfectly. Of you want to guide their growth, but you also want to let them develop into who they're going to be when they're adults.
Absolutely, and that's really what
I'm
going to
steal
all
that
about.
Probably.
you can certainly do that.
I do want to shift the conversation to rural Ohio because,
yes,
you know, some of the smaller communities, particularly those in Lincoln County, we're hearing pushback from folks there who are increasingly worried about how Intel and other development is going to change their communities. So what role do you think the state has in preserving rural places for the people who want to live that life?
I think, first of all, we need to be partners in this work. And I would hope that we've made that pretty clear, not only through the report, but we've had 35 hours of hearings. We heard from local communities. We heard from our township association. We heard from our local mayors and local residents. And we're here to be partners in the process. This is not something that the state's coming in and saying, you shall do this. We know, first of all, that does not work here in Ohio. But we also want to mitigate the fears. We want to be as supportive as possible, offer the resources that we can as a state because we're resource rich and we have lots of technical assistance that we can provide. We're looking at grants. We're looking at maybe even our tax scheme of how do we fund our schools maybe differently so that doesn't necessarily tie into property taxes. We're looking at a lot of different
things.
That's
a whole other hour.
That's a whole other hour, exactly. But we're looking at making the state be a partner for good and not a partner for evil. And that's the message that I really want to send. And I think that sometimes these things take on a life of their own. What I would say to the residents of Licking County is, yeah, you know, Intel is coming and it is probably scary. Life is going to change, but I do believe it's going to change for the better if we come together as a state and we try to help work through all of those issues, schooling, you know, transportation, workforce, housing. If we work through those issues, it can be a beautiful thing and we can reimagine what housing looks like in Ohio. If we do nothing, it could really be scary. So we got to educate. But we also have to work together, and we're committed to being a partner to all of the local communities on this issue.
You know, we're talking about zoning this hour, but zoning is one piece of the affordable housing puzzle.
Yes.
As your 97-page report pointed out, there are many other areas we need to think about. And I actually want to take a quick call from Frederick in Whitehall because he has a concern about gentrification.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to All Sides, Frederick.
Hello, how you doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm blessed.
So I understand your rent has been going up pretty significantly?
Yes, ma'am. I moved in my neighborhood, Southeast Columbus, probably like around, I believe, February of 2020. When I first moved there, it was like $650. And I had a decent pay. I worked at a garbage company making over $50,000 a year before taxes. Now, while I was there, it stayed that way for 2 years. In my last year, around November, coming back from out of town, I got a 45-day notice to move out. And I noticed they didn't ask me to re-sign my lease, so I couldn't fight it. They gave me back my rent, and when I went back sometime this year to check and see, you know, what's available and the renovations was done, it was, but it went up to $350 over the last payment rent I used to have. And I noticed this, too, also with my kid's mother, because she had a house not too far from where I stayed, and they did the same exact situation with her. They stopped having her sign a lease, and then they asked her, you know, to move out for like with a 30-day to 45-day notice.
You know, I think Frederick makes a good point that rent eviction is this thing that we're having a lot of conversation mm-hmm. here in Columbus. There's been a number of large-scale apartment complexes that have essentially said to every tenant, we'd like you to leave, we're going to renovate, and then we're going to go from being affordable housing to more high-end housing. Mm-hmm. And it's so tricky because I'm sure for you as a Republican and a conservative, you want landlords and business owners to be able to turn profits to run their businesses as they see fit, but it's also hard when you're turning out a bunch of people who rely on that affordable housing.
Absolutely. So what I would say is, you know, in one of our recommendations, we are looking at how we can update our codes for renters and make things more equitable for them, especially as it relates to evictions, eviction record ceilings. And so we currently have a bill that Senator Craig and I are working on, bipartisan bill, very proud of that, which talks about being able to expunge those eviction record ceilings. And there's a difference between a record filing and an actual eviction. And so what we're seeing is that there are landlords that if someone is late on their rent, they will file the eviction, but it may not actually all the way go through, but that filing still stays on.
It sticks forever.
It sticks forever.
It's not and like a credit report. I was
exactly.
So
and that is not good.
That
is not good. That is a barrier. And so what we need to be doing is eliminating those barriers. Now, if there's a bona fide eviction, then necessarily it should go through that process. But if it's something that is just sitting on someone's record and preventing them from getting housing, that's a problem. Likely also what's a problem is, you know, increasing rents, obviously we know. And I am a robust market thinker. I do believe that, you know, we need to allow the market to do what the market does. However, because of inflation, everything's upside down. And so if we can make the necessary adjustments to things like property taxes that are increasing so that homeowners and property owners don't necessarily have to, you know, make sure that the renters also absorb some of their costs.
I've heard that from landlords that they're like, look, the cost of repairs and construction mm-hmm. and property taxes have gone up. I'm not raising rent to be mean about it. Mm-hmm. I'm raising rent because my costs have gone up.
And that's the truth, because if you think about it, the flip side of that is, okay, say we cap rents. Well, if it's not conducive to a property owner anymore, then they get out of the business of buying property and renting to people. So now we have more of a homelessness problem, because that doesn't necessarily equate to a renter being able to now be a homeowner. So we still need people that are property owners to still be in the business of housing. And we have to make it a win-win situation for everyone.
Final question for you. We are on summer break. The legislature is not expected to come back till after the November election. Do you see any of this legislation moving this year, or do you anticipate having a bigger conversation about zoning next year?
So I would say the latter. I believe that it was intentional to get things started this year to have the conversation, but a lot of this work is going to require budgetary considerations.
So maybe in the budget next year.
Exactly. So we needed to be able to flesh out some things early and get some early adopters to have this conversation so that we could kind of sharpen our pencils, get ready for the budget, because we do want to really help in a tangible way. So some of this, hopefully we can get out this year, but if not, that was never really the plan. The plan is that we will come back next year with sharpened pencils and be able to get some work done.
That was Senator Michelle Reynolds, chair of the Special Committee on Housing for the Ohio Senate. Thank you for your time this morning.
Thank you, Anna.
Coming up, we're talking about Columbus's Zone In and the rethinking of zoning for urban areas. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Central Ohio is booming, but our housing stock just isn't keeping pace. Columbus says our zoning code is to blame. That is, it restricts us from building the apartments and multifamily homes that we need. Our city council wants to rezone all of Columbus, but they're starting with 12,000 parcels, or about 4% of the city, that live and work along specific corridors. It's called zone-in. And if it sounds simple and straightforward, well, it's not. The public meetings about zone-in have been long and at times contentious. Our next guest, Sam Zimmerman, is a real estate developer who keeps attending those meetings. Welcome to All Sides, Sam.
Thank you so much, Anna. It's delightful to be here.
You've been a real estate developer here in the Central Ohio area for more than 30 years. I first want to get your opinion on how Columbus's current zoning code contributes to the cost of housing.
Well, that's an excellent question. It's clumsy and it's very old. Sometimes I get a kick out of them talking about how old, because they say 70 years, but we've owned our property for 100 years. So before 30 years before it even existed. But it's clumsy and it has a history, including redlining, that kind of got locked into place. Even though those attitudes have changed, the fundamental bureaucracy of it really has not. And so it suppresses housing. And what we fundamentally have here is an imbalance between supply and demand. And so that's why you're seeing prices rising. There are other factors as well, which I'd be happy to discuss with you as a real estate developer, but really at the bottom of it, it's the fundamental rule that everyone understands, the universal rule of macroeconomics, supply and demand.
Yeah, one of the things I learned during our Untangled series on housing was that how much of Columbus's city is zoned single family only. It was around 80%. It was such a surprisingly large chunk of the city where only single family homes can be built.
Yes, and it's extremely difficult, timely, and costly, as Chairman Dorans on the city council has mentioned, and the mayor as well, to rezone a parcel. So even when it's extremely the correct idea to do so, it's compatible with all the adjacent uses, which is the case on our property, it's still a very, very difficult thing to get done. And so that suppresses the housing supply very significantly.
We also want to hear from you this hour. If you have been attending those zone-in meetings, if you have concerns, if you support it or you have reservations, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email your comments to allsides@wosu.org. So Columbus is starting with 4% of its parcels. It's about 12,000. And you have a piece of property that's just outside this area that's slating for rezoning. Can you tell me a little bit about your land at Henderson and Olentangy River Roads?
Well, let me start by saying we're not outside. We just haven't been included. We're surrounded by properties that are in phase one zone in, which is in the community activity center designation, which is we've been asked to, we have asked to be included in that. We don't understand why we haven't. I'm going to make a big statement right off the bat. We really are the poster child for phase one zone in and link us. We're the number one opportunity in the entire city for meeting all the goals of zone in and link us, which, you know, if you read their documents, it's housing, housing equity, transit-oriented development, active transportation, you know, like bikes, walking, and scooters, environmental preservation, just everything. I mean, we meet all the criteria for phase one zone, and that's beyond dispute. And yet, for some unexplained reason, we've been left out. And all we can guess is what they're saying here is that there's a severe housing crisis in Columbus, everywhere, except at the corner of Henderson and Olentangy. We don't understand that.
I know that you've reached out to the city council. You've been at some of these zone-in meetings. Have you made any headway in? I know that they just had to draw a line somewhere, and I get that, right? They didn't want to start with the whole city. There's more than 100,000 parcels in the city. But are you getting anywhere with the argument that maybe you should be in this first phase?
Not as much as we would like, that's for sure. I'd say it's an ongoing conversation, but they've told us that we're not going to be in phase one zone in. But let me tell you, they've been aware of our property and our desire to increase the housing in Columbus for over a decade. In fact, in 2019, we tried to rezone the land for 400 apartments, and we got an extremely ferocious NIMBY response. Over 300 people showed up at a high school to stop it. So that was 2019. So they've known about it for a long time. Ultimately, that effort came off the rails because there was a sewer problem, but that's getting fixed. But I reached out to Lisa Wise Consulting, which was the consultant the city hired back in October of 2023, and said, we want to be included in phase one. I also reached out to the development department. We have spoken, as you said, at all the public hearings. We've submitted written testimony. We've met with city councilors one-on-one, and even with people from the administration, the mayor's chief of staff, and everything else. So we've played by the rules, made our intentions clear going back many years, a decade, but so far we've been ignored, and that's very difficult to understand.
I want to talk a little bit about NIMBYism because you mentioned that you had hundreds of people come out in opposition to this rezone of your property, to building apartment complexes over there on Henderson and Olentangy River Roads.
Yes, ma'am.
What it is a complicated and difficult conversation to say we need affordable housing. I think a majority of people in Columbus would support that. But then when you talk about specifically where it's going to go, that's when the fights break out. And I want to know how much say should local communities have in what is getting built next door?
They should have a say. I do believe that. I was the chairman of the Planning and Zoning Committee of my county down here in Florida where I live now. So I have been on both sides of the aisle, but they cannot have any kind of say that significantly restricts the ability of supply and demand to come in balance. That's really the problem we're having now. And it's a rearview mirror problem. It's a problem that's happened and built up over a long time. And let me say this, it's not going to get better in the short term, even despite this legislation. A lot of the parcels that have been identified on the zone in map have existing uses on them. Now, it might not be the highest and best use, but there's a mortgage on that building, there are tenants in that building. So it'll take a long time for that to unwind if those numbers ever make sense. Whereas our parcel is shovel ready now, and we could add a minimum of 400 apartments immediately. That's an important distinction.
We have a comment, or really a question, from Paula in Columbus, who was wondering about increasing single-family housing. She just bought a home, and it was really hard to find one for the price. And, we're talking a lot about multifamily, about density, but we do need more single-family housing, right?
I don't think there's any question about that. If you were to look at this at a macroeconomic level, we need all across the board more housing, multifamily, single family, duplexes. A lot of this is going to be addressed in phase two, and Chairman Dorans is an excellent proponent of all of that. But she's absolutely right. Across the board, we need more housing. Or let me tell you, the consequences of Columbus not taking this action are profound for the citizens, and particularly in lower and middle income neighborhoods. Now, I want to say this, your previous caller called in and was concerned about what he called gentrification. And as we talk about building new housing, multifamily housing on some of these corridors, particularly a lot of them tend to be in older neighborhoods, in the short run, there will be a displacement as some of those older uses are torn down. In the long run, supply will drive down prices for everyone. But I want to say this again, on our property, we don't have any existing low or middle income housing. We're an immediate opportunity to just add more housing across the board, which is another head scratcher for us for why we've been left off.
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about gentrification because zoning is supposed to bring down the cost of housing by increasing supply. That, we just think about that, that makes sense. But you recently wrote a letter to Mayor Ginther and the Columbus City Council warning that zoning could, in some ways, make gentrification at least temporarily worse. Can you expand on that?
Well, it's just what I said. I mean, let me start by saying this. What the city council and the mayor is doing is one of the most consequential pieces of legislation that Columbus has had in front of them. I'm going to say in 25 or 30 years. And I say that as an informed person because I'm a real estate developer, and I said I've also been on the planning and zoning board. So I tip my hat to them. It takes great political capital and great political courage for them to do what they've done. And that's tremendous. But everyone has to acknowledge that there are some unfortunate side effects that may occur in the short run. I don't want to call it gentrification necessarily. That's kind of a loaded word, but some of the existing stock of low and medium income housing, may be temporarily displaced. You're tearing down something and you're building something taller and more dense. And until the supply exceeds the demand, but there's no way to avoid that. You understand? There's no amount of government subsidy that's going to keep rents down. Only the market can provide that. But again, I'm going to say it's another reason why we're wondering when we can immediately add over 400 units, including workforce housing, because there's density bonuses and zone-in for workforce housing, which we would almost certainly take advantage of because it's very attractive. It makes us wonder, why wouldn't we be included? Because we don't have any of those negative effects. And you've probably also heard, because they've made some modifications recently, that there are some historic districts like German Village, Victorian Village, and even neighborhoods, I want to say this, that aren't designated or protected particularly like those areas are, that are going to make, you know, it could change some of the charming features of that neighborhood. Let's say that again. Or historic structures. People have written in and say there's historic structures, some protected, some unprotected, all over Columbus, that are imperiled. None of those things apply to our land. This is a raw piece of land we've owned for 100 years. My great-grandfather bought it in 1924, and it is ready to be developed. We're ready to pass it on to help solve this problem for Columbus. You got to understand, we feel passionate about when you've owned something that long, and when you've lived in a community as long as you have, this seems to us like a beautiful thing for us to be able to participate in. We don't understand why we've been left off. We don't have the problem of displacement for low and middle income people. And honestly, another thing, there's been an issue about parking and they've tried to fix that too. You know,
that is one of the more controversial parts of Zone In, is changing the one-to-one parking requirement.
It is very brave for them to have proposed that. And there is no question that the increased cost of parking, particularly structured parking, when you're talking about big buildings on small parcels, is wildly expensive and definitely increases the rent probably by more than $100 a month. And this is why LinkUS is such an important part of it, you know, providing bus rapid transit for these, for our citizens to be able to move around without necessarily getting in their own car and commuting every day. But the question is, if you live in Clintonville and they're going to do this on Indianola and High Street, are you going to come home at 5:10 p.m. and have 10 cars parked in front of your house? You might not like that. I understand that. And they've done some things in the modifications that they announced in the last few days.
Maybe residential parking zones like that. Yeah.
Yeah. But still, it kind of is what it is. Well, again, on our property, you can't park on Henderson Road. You can't park on Olentangy. So again, we do not have those problems. We would have to internally park everything. We would have no negative effect on any of the existing neighborhoods. So again, these are things that citizens in these public meetings have spoken about. And as I've listened to them, I'm like, well, none of that applies to our parcel. So why have we been left off?
If you want to join the conversation this hour, if you have thoughts about Zone In, or maybe you live in one of the areas proposed, give us a call at 614-292-8513. And I want to take a call from Michael in Columbus. Welcome to All Sides, Michael.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
So my question is, you know, about modular homes. Columbus has always hated them for some reason. You can't put a modular home on your own property without a zone for it, which then leaves it down to what is a trailer park who owns, you know, you have to pay monthly fee to. Is any change in that's going to occur for modular homes? You can, you know, I have a piece of property and I can't put a house on it because I can't afford even the smallest home on it, even though there is a base cost for most places. But I can, you know, through a smaller contractor, put a modular home on it.
You know, that is always a difficult question, Sam, about modular housing, about tiny housing, about maybe accessory dwelling units on your own property. These are all very controversial questions, but I think they are important ones to be asking.
There's no question about it. I mean, when you're talking about modular homes, you're talking about probably a fierce NIMBY reaction. Is that fair? I'm not going to weigh in on that. But you mentioned tiny homes. That's an interesting trend that's happening. Yeah, I would say if the city of Columbus wants to look at other areas where they can tweak the code, they might want to look at tiny homes. I think it's been deployed you know, legislatively in some jurisdictions, probably locally, and they have had some success.
Yeah, one of the things that surprised me about zoning is it limits how small of a house you can build. And in a lot of places, it can be 1,000 square feet is the minimum, 900 square feet is the minimum. So you can't build the tiny house legally because the code prohibits it.
There's no question about that. And you also get into setbacks, you know, how far you can build from
how
the
close they can be to each other.
Yeah. Yeah. All of these things. But I will say this, the zone in legislation is pretty comprehensive about those things. And so they've addressed setbacks because, of course, it limits how much you can build on a property. When you take that and parking and you make it more rational, as I believe they have done in the legislation, you end up with more housing. And so, again, I tip my hat to them because I think it's a very well-crafted piece of legislation. We would just like to be a part of it.
Yeah, homeowners associations will probably have kittens if they ban them from prohibiting accessory dwelling units on people's properties.
Yeah, that the homeowners associations definitely like to weigh in. But the bigger problem is really the area commissions, in our case, the Northwest Civic Association. A lot of these people bought their homes 40 years ago. They've settled into a quiet life. And there's a lot of fear-based decision-making that goes on, which, you know, we can be sympathetic to and we can understand, and we've certainly tolerated in the city of Columbus for a long time. And it's led our growth to a place where it's a good city, but now some of the negative repercussions of that, which is effectively a veto over more development and more dense development, it's really caused a serious problem. And so that just has to be moderated in a way where it still makes sense for them to have a say-so in some regard, but no more veto power. I mean, the mayor has come out and made a very strong statement, and I applaud him for it. He said, no more NIMBYism. We all need to have YIMBY attitudes, which is, yes, in my backyard. And so I hope the area commissions, and in my case, the Northwest Civic Association, takes that to heart. It's important for the future of Columbus.
You know, since you're a developer, I did want to get your take on property tax abatements. They've come up a lot during this conversation about rezoning in Columbus. Are they just the cost of doing business? Because a lot of local residents are saying, fine, build the apartment complex, but make them pay their taxes.
It's a very difficult issue. I'm not sure I understand all the economics of it. Is it a subsidy to the developer? I don't think we can call it anything other than that. Is it impossible to build multifamily housing without that? Increasingly, it seems so. You know, interest rates are very high, and this is why this problem is going to get worse in the future. And they may be coming down, so that'll be relieved. But you got to understand, if you had built something in 2018, particularly something mid-rise, so concrete and steel, if you were to reproduce that exact same building today, it would be 40 to 60% more expensive. And then an insurance has exploded too. And on an operating basis, as you so rightly pointed out earlier, the cost of managing that apartment building, you know, replacing the faucets, all kinds of painting the building, those costs have just skyrocketed. So there's a lot of price pressures coming in from all places. What can the government do? Well, it can't do anything about all those other things, but it can provide a tax abatement. And if that's the only thing that gets us more housing, we have to very seriously consider it. One thing I would say is I think tax abatements work better when they are tax abatements for the municipality. But as far as the school district is concerned, I'm a little less sympathetic to the idea that the school districts should not receive their share of the tax. But that's a personal point of view.
I have a final question for you. It comes from Vicky in Northwestern Columbus. She had a concern about Olentangy and Henderson, specifically about the traffic and about what development may add to traffic, not only on the parcel you're looking to develop, but just generally to Columbus.
Well, all I can tell you is the city has zoned in all kinds of parcels into phase one on Olentangy and on Henderson Road. And moreover, now the city of Upper Arlington, just a mere 1.5 miles away from our site, is doing Re-Envision Henderson, where they are working with the city of Columbus to do a similar thing to zone in. So it's obviously the opinion of the city of Columbus and working in conjunction with Upper Arlington that traffic in this area is not a constraint on further housing.
That was Sam Zimmerman, a real estate developer here in Central Ohio. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you, Anna. It was a pleasure.
Coming up, we're talking zoning in rural Ohio and the impact of Intel on those communities. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
Here at Shortwave Space Camp, we escape our everyday lives to explore the mysteries and quirks of the universe. We find weird, fun, interesting stories that explain how the cosmos is partying all around us. From stars to dwarf planets to black holes and beyond, we've got you. Listen now to the Shortwave podcast from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking about zoning this hour, the invisible legal lines that shape our neighbors, our communities, and ultimately, our lives. We've been talking about zoning in the big cities like Columbus, but now I want to shift to the needs of rural Ohioans. Bill Bogance is a trustee for the Liberty Township in Licking County. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi, Anna. Thank you.
So you've had some reservations about Senate Bill 243, which we talked about with Senator Reynolds earlier, about how it might be written to address the housing crisis and what it might impose on your region in particular. Can you walk us through what your concerns are?
Yeah, Anna, thank you for the opportunity. Our concerns are much tied around all the conversations that were leading up to Senate Bill 243 being introduced. The 97-page report that you referred to, we had a lot of information coming our way as that was being produced, and the concern was that they were going to recommend a bill that would remove the authority from the townships and actually put the zoning authority with the state, and the state would create standards for zoning, and it would be statewide. A lot of what I hear today from Senator Reynolds and Mr. Zimmerman seems to suggest that a lot of that is focused at maybe Columbus area. So that's reassuring, but Senate Bill 243 is so vague that it suggests that it would be statewide and affect township zoning as well. So we're very passionate about protecting township zoning.
Yeah, there were two asphalt plants proposed for Licking County, and one was canceled after public outcry. There are a lot of concerns in your community about not only Intel, but the secondary, the third tier development that's going to come to your area as a result of this plant.
Yeah, so the asphalt plants are in the were proposed in the St. Albans Township, which is just south of us. And of course the public was up in arms about that, and I believe rightfully so. In Liberty Township, we're north of that, and we're putting some, you know, zoning in place to protect us from that. You can't stop everything, but you can protect and control where that type of business can go. So it's very important is St. Albans Township and their residents came together, and they had a voice on what they wanted and what they didn't want in that area. Some of the concerns is, if you've ever been in Alexandria, the traffic coming through that little town and the truck traffic and the safety, that was a major concern, let alone the property values that would drop because of having that type of a business in your community. So I really appreciate the concerns that area had, and we would have the same areas if that was concerns if we had that proposed in our township as well.
You know, one of the things I've always thought of traditionally about rural zoning or county zoning is that it's less restrictive than the big cities, right? It's more you do what you want on your own property, and you move out there sometimes because you want to do what you want on your own property. But I kind of wonder how that dovetails with when large major developers like Intel come to town, because then you don't have a lot of zoning regulating what can and can't happen.
Yeah, well, I can speak for myself. I moved out here because I wanted a rural environment. If I wanted to build a chicken coop, I could build a chicken coop. If I wanted to build a barn, I could. So it is true, it's flexible, but it's flexible within our constraints of our zoning code. We do have code in place to protect our residents from what a neighbor might do. So I can't just put up anything I want wherever I want if it's going to affect the neighbor's property value or the safety for my neighbor. So it is flexible, but it also has restrictions that everyone has to live within. And when people are buying land in Liberty Township, we have a comprehensive plan that informs that person, here's what we allow and here's where we allow it. It's not that we don't allow commercial anywhere, but we have areas and districts where we allow that type of commercial and that type of building. So it is flexible, but at the same time, it's controlled to protect the neighborhood and also to make sure that when we grow responsibly so that we have infrastructure that we need, that we don't impact the schools negatively, we don't impact neighbors' property values, so on and so forth. So there is a ton of flexibility in rural America, but it also is zoned to protect, you know, folks from things that may not be desirable.
We're talking about zoning this hour, and if you like talking public policy, then you should consider joining us for Politics and a Pint. Mike Thompson and I will be hosting a round of Politics and a Pint with two veteran journalists at Seven Suns Brewing on Thursday, August 15th. You can go online and get your tickets at wosu.org/events. You know, I want to talk a little bit about one of the things that Senator Reynolds touched on in the beginning of the hour, which is that one of the things that rural communities sometimes want is a way to grow business, is, you know, broadband, roads, access, shovel-ready projects that would keep people in the community. How do you balance that desire to keep people living there against what's happening, say, when a big business decides that they want to come and perhaps fundamentally change the way the community looks?
Yeah. So some of the things you point out as concerns, broadband being one of them, you know, out here, especially where I live, we don't have cable. You know, I'm on Starlink and I pay a lot of money just to get internet service. So that is something that we've looked at, not just for businesses coming in, but even our residents have been screaming for broadband services and this sort of type of services. So those are important for business as well as just our local residents. So we have designated areas in our township where we're more open to that type of growth and more open to businesses and their needs, be it water and sewer, be it internet services, so on and so forth. But we won't permit that everywhere. We will permit that where it makes sense for the business and for the residents, and where we can actually plan for the infrastructure that is needed to support that, the roads, the water, the sewer, the internet, the power, everything.
You know, in the conversation about zoning, ultimately it becomes a conversation about affordable housing. Like, we're talking about zoning in part because we're talking about the cost of homes. How have the cost of homes and your community changed over the last couple of years?
Absolutely. The cost of housing has skyrocketed. I'm also a full-time real estate broker, so I see this every day. Before Intel got announced, you could buy land out here in Liberty Township for $7,000 to $15,000 an acre.
Oh my goodness.
Yes. Literally months after the announcement of Intel, land started skyrocketing to $50,000 to $200,000 an acre. So building, you have to buy the land. Land has skyrocketed. The cost of materials have skyrocketed. The supply chain of those materials is an issue. And quite frankly, I think one of the biggest issues in the cost of and availability of housing is the shortage of labor. The trades are screaming for people to get into the electrical, the carpentry, the HVAC services, and they're providing amazing apprenticeship programs and wages and benefits. But the labor force, I think, is one of the major issues of actually addressing the affordable housing crisis.
We actually did a whole show last week on the blue collar job boom. So you can go online and find that at wosu.org/allsides. It was about one of the questions that I had about is how Ohio is meeting that need for those workers, because it is, I believe the national number was we were going to need 500,000 plumbers in the next 30 years nationally, because so many of them are retiring. The average age for skilled electricians and tradespeople continues to get older and older and older.
Yeah. That's the labor shortage is huge. And I would strongly encourage those individuals graduating from high school to look at the trades. It is, you don't have to spend $100,000, $200,000 in college degree. You can join the trades. They'll help you get certified. They'll help train you, and you will make a very, very good wage. So, yeah, I think that's part of the answer to the problem.
So Senator Reynolds said that Senate Bill 243, which deals with zoning, is likely not going to go anywhere this session, but it was about laying the foundation for next year, particularly during the budget negotiations next year. What are you going to hope to see and perhaps not see from legislation when we come back next year?
Yeah, well, I appreciate the concerns that Senator Reynolds and Mr. Zimmerman point out, but I am concerned with Senate Bill 243. And I guess what I desire is that they don't try to minimize or remove the ability of the township to zone. I feel it's very critical and very important that the residents of the community have a say, and whether that's in Columbus, you know, Franklin County, or Liberty Township in Licking County, I believe local residents should have a say, and a very strong say, on what moves in near them. And my view of it is, if something's going to be developed next to them, it should at least enhance their property values and, or at least keep it neutral. But if it's something that's going to go in and it's going to decrease their property values or decrease safety, then I think the residents have an opportunity and a right to speak up against that. The other thing we're hearing is not only the potential of removing township zoning, but also changing the referendum percentage. So today, if something goes in...
Unfortunately, we're going to have to leave it there. That was Liberty Township Trustee Bill Bogance. Thank you for joining us on All Sides.